This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. We can take you directly into the sound of what it feels like to experience a 7.8 magnitude earthquake, as the people of Nepal and the trekkers on Everest did Saturday.
The ground is shaking.
Oh!
Come under my jacket. Come under my jacket. Are you okay?
Yeah.
You alright?
Yeah.
The sounds now of people in Nepal by the millions, still counting the thousands of dead and feeling the forces deep within the earth still shaking their devastated cities and villages.
Everyone by surprise.
The tremor was there whole day, every 30 minutes the tremor was coming.
And people flooded out of the shops, the street was filled, people were grabbing each other.
We stayed outside the hotel on the ground.
And once it finished, there was just floods of people just running to open spaces.
My guide immediately told me, come with me, it just protects us and push us out on the ground and really save our life, because everything goes dust on us. We couldn't breathe. It was horrible.
We take you now to Kathmandu and Alina Shresh, the communications manager for one of the major NGOs involved in the relief efforts, along with the United Nations, World Vision. Alina, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. And what would you say are the key challenges for Nepal as we begin this week?
The key challenges for us would be to get to areas which are inaccessible in Nepal. It is not just the Kathmandu Valley that has been affected and impacted by the major earthquake that took place on Saturday. It's the neighboring districts, which are hilly districts and inaccessible roads.
And how many people do you think are at risk if you look at the map and add up the populations?
Well, as of now, we have the information from UN that around 35 out of 75 districts in Nepal has been affected, and the population for that would be 6 million people impacted by the earthquake.
And as communications manager, how difficult is getting communications across all of that area and to monitor the status of 6 million people?
Oh, well, the radio is doing its part on informing people, but we as an organization, we work only in 11 districts of Nepal, so we are trying to communicate as much as we can to ensure the safety of our staff and to find out and do the assessments.
And what are the food shortages, the questions of time ticking, issues of exposure? What are people, the experts at World Vision, telling you about how much time and how important time is at this point?
Well, time is very important. We already have begun our distribution today in one of the affected districts within the Kathmandu Valley. We are distributing 10,000 tarps and 600 blankets for people who have lost their homes. So, yes, it's very important.
And what about your family and the family of aid workers who are in the area? So many people are both involved in the rescue effort and concerned about their own families. Are you one of those?
Yes. It's not an easy task to be away from your family when we've been receiving aftershocks. Yesterday, we received a major aftershock at around 1 p.m., and it was like an earthquake. It was like similar to an earthquake. And I have a five-year-old boy who's been panic-stricken. So, yes, my heart is at home, whereas I'm in the office working to ensure our relief efforts.
What are these aftershocks feeling like?
They feel like an earthquake, exactly like an earthquake. And yes, there have been many, many aftershocks. My family and I have been sleeping in tents since we faced the major earthquake on Saturday. And in my house, we have around 50 people who've come to take temporary shelter because of the open space, the little garden that I have.
We're talking with Alina Shrestha, who's communications manager for World Vision in Nepal. She's on the line from Kathmandu. How has the medical infrastructure been affected as far as you can tell? Are hospitals working? Are doctors able to be mobile? Are people able to come to clinics? Are mobile clinics being setting up? All of those questions.
Yes, our hospitals do not have the capacity to respond. So we have heard news of mobile clinics being set up even on football grounds because a lot of patients are being treated on pavements and the hospitals are running out on medical supplies as well. Yes, so mobile clinics are being set up.
What's your main goal for the next 24 hours?
At the moment, what we are doing is assessing the needs of people in a very badly affected district of Nepal, which was the epicenter called Gorkha. So our teams are there and we're trying to find out their needs within this 24 hours and even distributing whatever we have at hand, like I said, 1,000 tarps and 600 blankets to the people who are in need, dire need of shelter today.
Alita Shrestha is a communications manager for World Vision on the line from Kathmandu. Thanks so much, Alina.
Thank you.
And the culture of Nepal is evident worldwide, and there are reverberations of grief all around the world. This vigil took place over the weekend in Jackson Heights, Queens, a moment captured by our friends here at WNYC. Joining me now is Samrat Upadhyay, who's a Nepali writer and professor at Indiana University, speaking to us from Bloomington. Welcome, Samrat.
Thank you.
So what's your reaction? I mean, the Nepalese live in a very vulnerable zone in the world. Nevertheless, this is devastating, and watching the aftermath is heartbreaking.
Yes, it's a very difficult time for a lot of Nepalese, obviously, for Nepalese living abroad like myself. I have parents in Kathmandu, and I have been in touch with them. They were sleeping outside in camps, under tents, in rain. There's a great deal of fear in Nepal right now.
How does the political instability in the region and the issues of Kashmir and Tibet and just the extent to which there is such political ambiguity throughout this region affect the rescuing efforts, in addition to the fact that it's so geologically and geographically remote?
Right. I think in this current crisis, there's a general lack of confidence in the politicians and in the government. So that's there. But I think in this particular crisis, it's more an issue of the terrain and how to get help to people out in remote villages. Reports are coming in now of entire villages being decimated. So how to get aid there in such topography is the big question, I think.
Do you think the presence of Everest has turned Nepal on some level into an international zone because so many people go there for mountain climbing reasons and, other sort of spiritual quests?
Yeah, Everest is important. Everest is important for Nepal's economy, too, because it generates income. And it also provides the whole trekking industry provides employment to a lot of locals. But I think the avalanches in Everest have also affected, there have been reports of death. But there, I think the devastation is more widespread elsewhere. I think that's where the focus should be.
And I think as well it should be there. The question is, will the international community rally for Nepal because it has such a profile in the world? And when you describe these villages and cities that are at the focus of the devastation, what sorts of places are you thinking about?
Well, I mean, the news that has come out mostly until now has been about Kathmandu, which is the place where I grew up. And one of the things that has happened, apart from the deaths and the general fear, is the destruction of these ancient monuments. So there are three Darbar squares, palace squares in Kathmandu, and one has been decimated entirely. So these monuments, these are sort of the pride and joy for many Nepalese, including myself. I take students from Indiana University there every year, and I just take great pleasure in showing them around. And now they're all gone.
And the significance of these places to you growing up, was there a sense of the earth having powerful forces beneath it that could move underneath this place of your birth? And if they're all gone, what does that mean for you in terms of remembering your own childhood?
Yes, I mean it's an obliteration of a part of our history. It seems like, while growing up, we were quite aware that, you know, Nepal was earthquake prone. We'd been hearing about it, and there was one big earthquake in 1934 on, I believe it was 8.0 Richter scale, and that also took thousands of lives. And there was always talk that, you know, something like this was going to happen. Yeah, it's I think we Nepalese will have to reassess what, you know, what these. I mean, I think it's not only Nepalese. I mean, these were World Heritage sites, so this is a loss for people all over the world.
How does the spiritual sense of you growing up in your culture integrate with the land and the landscape and this sense of being towered over by these huge sort of natural monuments and, you know, the elements that are around you that are so much greater than any individual human?
So these monuments are very much a part of the spiritual tradition because, you know, a lot of these monuments are temples. And Nepal has many temples, but these were specially prized temples where people actually go to pray. So these are, you know, even though there are a lot of tourists there, you actually see the locals praying in these temples. Yet I think because of the dominance of Hinduism and Buddhism in Nepal, we are also quite attuned to the idea that, you know, things are impermanent, because Buddha was born in Nepal, and Buddha also talked about suffering. And I think this can also be a moment of great reflection for us amidst all this suffering.
Samrat Upadhyay is a Nepali writer and professor at Indiana University. Thanks so much for helping us to understand what you're going through, and really I hope that your family stays safe.
Thank you, John.
If you want to help the people of Nepal, our colleagues at Public Radio International have compiled a list of 7 responsible nonprofits that are working to provide relief right now. All you need to do is visit thetakeaway.org to see the full list.